broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
A crisp, salty breeze slices through the air, leaving droplets of ocean water on my skin. My sunburned hands grip the splintery balcony railing, and I let my gaze wander to the sinking sun. As the sun departs, a new phase begins, a stage of beginnings, something new and unknown. My heart, which had begun to beat at extraordinary speeds, slowed as I took in gulps of thin, humid air. Thoughts of excitement, anticipation, and wonder swirled through my head in a tornado of confusion. Emily Genshaw, from her story, Innocence, in The Beach House. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. Today, we're talking about beach reads, those stories and books you can finish before the sunscreen fades on your arms, before the children totally drive you crazy, and before the radio on the next blanket over becomes a complete distraction. Stories to leave you completely edified on a sun-drenched day at the beach. In the first segment of our program, to discuss this delightful genre, we're honored to have Nancy Day Sakadusky, award-winning writer, editor, and owner of Cat and Mouse Press. Susan McAnally, general manager of Browse About Books in Rehoboth, Delaware, and author Nancy Balcharowski Sherman, who will read her prize-winning story, Why You Trashed Vera Wang. The second segment of our program will be a noir radio drama, Fair Warning, adapted from a short story of the same name by Dennis Lawson. It was published in The Beach House. The drama features members of the Community Players of Salisbury. Nancy, Susan, and Nancy again, welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition.
Thank you, Hal. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Hal.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Nancy and Susan, Cat and Mouse Press is sponsoring a contest called Rehoboth Beach Reads. It's a short story contest with Browse About Books providing a generous prize of $500. Tell us, Nancy, about the contest, would you?
Sure. It's a contest for specifically beach reads. It's not a literary competition. And this year's theme is The Boardwalk. Last year's theme was The Beach House, and that's why the book is titled The Beach House. It's a competition for stories of 500 to 3,500 words, any genre except children's literature, poetry, erotica, or religious material.
What? No, erotica?
Sorry,
I thought this was beach reads.
Maybe next year.
Oh, okay.
And Browse About Books generously donated the $500 first prize, but 20 to 30 of the stories will make it into the final book, so that's the real prize, publication. The judges for the contest, we were lucky to get a wonderful panel of judges. Rich Barnett, who's a writer from Rehoboth who wrote Discreet Charms of the Bourgeois Beach Town. Sarah Barnett, no relation to Rich, she was the first prize winner from last year. Lisa Graff, who's a writer, a teacher, and a columnist. Kristen Grammer, who's the assistant director at the Lewis Library. Faye Jacobs, another accomplished humor writer who wrote Time Fries and other books in that series. And Ramona DeFelice Long, a writer, editor, and local blogger.
Nancy, how did you select these people as judges?
Well, I think it's a nice cross-section of people from different areas and with different strengths. And we knew there'd be a lot of diversity in the entries, and I wanted to make sure that all the selections got a good judging.
And they're all from the Eastern Shore, the judges are, or from other areas?
Yeah, pretty much. No, they're all pretty much from this area. All the entrants are not. You don't have to live in Rehoboth or even the immediate area to enter. Anybody can enter. You just have to have in your story some connection to the Rehoboth area, and it has to fit the theme for the year.
And the theme for Beach Reads for
the
last year?
The theme for last year was the Beach House, yeah. And that's why the book that recently won first prize in the National Federation of Presswomen competition is all about beach houses, but very different takes. The writers were very creative in how they interpreted that theme, and we hope this year will be the same with the interpretation of the boardwalk theme.
What last year was the first year.
Yes,
I understand.
Yes.
for the contest, and you picked the beach house as the theme. What led you to choose the beach house? I mean, other than, you know, it's a great theme to work on. But beyond that, what was going through your mind when you chose the beach house?
I wanted a theme that wouldn't restrict the writers too much, but that would provide some continuity for the book, because the goal was, I had two goals for this competition. One was to give particularly new and emerging writers a chance to be published, because that can be very difficult to get that first publication credit. And even for accomplished writers, it's nice to be published. So I wanted to give an opportunity for local writers to be published. But the second goal that I had was to try to produce a really good book. And so I wanted a book that didn't have all the same story. I wanted a diversity of stories, different interpretations, but with some thread that runs through them. And that's exactly what we got.
Well, you certainly did. I've read the book, and I read all of the stories. And in fact, the second segment of our program is going to be an adaptation of one of those wonderful kind of crime noir stories into a little radio drama, which we're going to hear the second half of the program today. Susan, $500. My goodness. Why did Browse About Books feel that this was a good thing for you guys to become involved in?
Nancy approached us with a very clear goal, which is always interesting when you're dealing with local authors. Sometimes they can be a little scattershot, and Nancy had a very clear goal. She wanted to produce something that was, you know, that was well put together, that was well thought out, that was well marketed, and we certainly appreciated that. You know, we strive as a local bookstore. Obviously, we want to support our local writing community, and this certainly seemed like, you know, the best way for us to be able to do that. I think she got a great collection of books, a collection of stories together. It's something that have been very proud to stand behind this year. You know, it's prominently placed in the store. People love it, and you know, we do have that sort of selfish reason behind it, which is that we have sold a lot of these books.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, that's wonderful.
So, you know, it's a great balance of, you know, being able to support the literary community and selling books, because, as you know, independent bookstores are becoming fewer and far between. And, you know, we've managed to stay in business for 40 years. A large part of that is our great love of books, but it's also our being able to market the right books to the right audience. So I think this was a great collaboration.
That's terrific, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the bookstore in just a moment. But Nancy, where you may have mentioned, where do your entries come from?
They come from all over. There's certainly a very high number coming from Delaware, Maryland, and, you know, the surrounding areas. But we had entries even from Germany. So anybody who's visited Rehoboth and gotten a sense of what Rehoboth is like and is a writer, I mean, you could live anywhere and write a good story.
Go right ahead.
Yeah, so the one thing I did want to say is we had a very good representation from our local writing guild, which is wonderful, the Rehoboth Beach Writers Guild. Right. their members not only submitted a lot of entries, but won a lot of positions in the book are by Guild members. So that was really nice to see.
Terrific. You're a supporter of the Guild at Browse About Books, I understand.
We are.
Maybe not financially, but you provide space for them to do things. Say a little bit about your relationship to the Guild, if you would.
Sure, Al. We do have quite a nice relationship with Mary Beth Fisher, who heads the Rehoboth Beach Writers Guild. We, again, just try and support local authors as much as possible. We sell books for their events. We try to represent their authors as well as we can, because a lot of them are self-published, and we want to give those people an opportunity. We want them to be able to feel that pride of having their own book in their local bookstore, and I think it's an important feature of a community bookstore.
Well, the other thing I understand about your bookstore is that in addition to the Guild, you are very active in the community as well. Say something about the kinds of things you do to help support the Rehoboth community.
Oh, golly. It's a long list, because Steve and Barbara Crane own the bookstore, and they are the original owners of the store. And as I said, next year is our 40th anniversary. So we have very strong ties to the community. We do a lot with the animal, with the Humane Society and the shelters. We're very active in that community. We try and support the local schools. We have a lot of events for children, because we feel like that is such a huge part of it's a responsibility as a bookstore, we think, because we have to encourage that younger generation to read. It's just, it really is our mission to make sure children are exposed to wonderful literature and have access and be able to put their hands on books.
Do you do any kind of children's programs to further encourage the children's
absolutely,
reading?
Absolutely, Hal. In the summertime especially, we have story times Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays at 9 a.m. We have a fabulous art teacher who reads the stories to the kids. They do crafts. We have character events. So this past weekend, we had Skippy John Jones, who is this fabulous Siamese cat who likes to pretend like he's a chihuahua. So the kids actually get to meet the characters, and they get to hug Skippy John Jones, and it really does make the books come alive for them, because there's so much competition with the video games and television, and sometimes a book can seem a little boring to a child, and if we can sort of make them come alive for them, I think it's a great thing.
Oh, absolutely, and I understand you guys do an excellent job of that. Well, let me ask you another technical question, Nancy. Is there a fee for submitting? And maybe you mentioned that.
Yeah, there is a small fee, $10 per entry. And all the information on the contest is on the website, which is catandmousepress.com. There are some very basic guidelines, but I do recommend that anybody who's thinking of submitting, read the guidelines carefully, because everything is spelled out there. But the deadline is July 1st, so people don't have a lot of time to enter the contest.
Right. We had the boardwalk last year, and the theme this year?
This year is the boardwalk. Last year was the beach house.
Yeah, the beach house, yeah. and now we're the boardwalk.
The boardwalk.
How did you come up with the boardwalk?
Well,
and then what's next?
Yeah, well, I have some ideas, but I'm not ready to
talk
about them yet.
Okay.
But I try to come up, as I said, with a theme that doesn't pen the writers down too much, but is broad enough that people have a lot of creative interpretation. The boardwalk, there's so many things that happen, even day versus night, and there's a lot of options for people to create stories. So I thought it would be a nice theme.
Well, a lot of things relative to the boardwalk that we can't mention on a family.
That's true.
That
program falls under the erotica.
Yeah, that's why that falls under the erotica.
I better not mention that the theme was my husband's idea then.
Terrific. Well, let me ask you this. We're doing beach reads now, and you hit on this a little bit earlier. What is a beach read? Tell me.
Well, I'd like to hear Susan's idea. What I think the bottom line is, when people are on the beach, they don't have a lot of concentrated focus time. So, I mean, you could read A Tale of Two Cities, but would you really want to? You want something short, light, entertaining. It could be a serious topic, but something that you can read. That's why short stories are such a perfect medium for it. You're there, radios, as you said in your opening, you know, music, there's a lot of activity, you're kind of keeping half an eye on the kids or whatever, and you want something that you can, you know, read and enjoy, but finish what you're reading at one time, and I think beach reads are perfect for that.
Well, the beach season is upon us, and what books should people be looking to read this summer?
Well, of course, the first one I'm going to say is The Beach House. I think that's
good recommendation.
That's definitely going to be our number one bestseller. You know, as far as other, you know, authors that everyone's going to be talking about, we've got two great events coming up. Ellen Hildebrand, in my opinion, is the queen of the beach reads. A lot of her books are set in Nantucket. She's going to be at the bookstore on July 27th doing a book signing. We always have a huge turnout for her. Women come from all over. I mean, we've had women travel hours just to meet her and have her sign a book. Her books are great. They're well-written. They're light. They're fun. And I think there is a there's a fine line for us between something. People still want something well-written, and people
yes,
aren't
definitely.
Willing to settle anymore. They're not just willing to pick up whatever book is in front of them. People, readers are more discerning. Even though there are more books out there, I think people are more choosy about what they're willing to read and honestly what they're willing to pay for. So, you know, I think the books have to be well written, which is, you know, what we liked about this collection because it's such a curated collection for the Beach House. Other big books that are coming out this summer, my favorite one that's coming out is by Leanne Moriarty. It's a book called Big Little Lies, and she wrote What Alice Forgot and The Husband's Secret. She is the epitome of a beach read to me because she's aimed at women, which, as we know, is the largest book buying market, or, you know. And her books are just, they're well paced, they're easy to dip in and out of, but there's a strong, she usually has a strong message in her books, and they're just fun. She's got a great sense of humor. That's my favorite pick. Today was the release of the new Hillary Clinton autobiography. We anticipate selling a lot of that, even though it's a gigantic tome and not what one would normally think of as a beach read. But we do have so many visitors from the Washington, D.C. area and Philadelphia, and people still, you know, people are still gonna want that content, which is great. Jennifer Weiner is another one. She has a new book, All Fall Down, that's going to be coming out next month. One interesting genre that's sort of taken the forefront is the young adult books. You know, the John Green book. You know, people have gone crazy for that. The Fault in Our Stars, the movie just released. Oh. And people of all ages are reading that book and finding something, you know, something worthwhile in it. And it's a genre that's exploding. It really does sort of transcend that particular age group.
This list you've just run, I can't remember three of them. Is there a way to find this list on the website that you just enumerated for us?
Absolutely, and I do have more titles because if we're talking about books, I could go on a ridiculous amount of time. But what I'll do is I'll put it on two places. It'll be on our website, which is browseaboutbooks.com, and then I'll also put it on our Facebook page. So be sure to, you know, go on Facebook and like us on Facebook because we have all sorts of information about what's coming up in the summer, events, our whole children's program. One other great beach author that we have coming to the store is Dorothea Benton Frank. She'll be at the store on June 26th, and she writes low country fiction, mostly aimed at women, but they're just, they're great stories.
Yeah.
I did want to mention one good opportunity to see Browse About Books and get a look at all the wonderful beach reads there is tomorrow when there's going to be the summer signing party for the Beach House. So that would be an opportunity not only to see the Beach House book itself, but to meet a lot of the authors. You mentioned, you asked me where the authors come from. We had an author from Illinois who's flying in for the event tomorrow.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, so it's going to be a great activity. We're going to have food, music, giveaways, of course, signings.
Yeah.
Because most of the authors of the stories will be there. But that'll be a big event tomorrow at Browse About at 3 o'clock.
It's wonderful. And I wanted to say the new book, I'm interested in what people are going to say about the boardwalk.
Yeah, I am too.
My devious mind here. But when would we expect the new book about the
boardwalk?
It'll
be out before the end of the year. We're on roughly the same timetable as we had for the beach house, where it'll be out in time for the holiday buying season, and then we'll have a big summer launch the following season.
Well, Nancy Sherman, you wrote a story called Why You Trashed the Vera Wang, and you're going to read that story to us, I hope. It's a wonderful story, and I think it captures the genre beach read. But after you read the story, we're going to come back and talk a little bit about it again. So, Nancy, read your prize-winning story that's in the book The Beach House.
Why You Trashed Vera Wang. You wish that you'd kept that Keurig coffee maker you got as a wedding present, but since it came from Josh's sister, it seemed only right to give it back. No wedding, no Keurig. But after consuming so much alcohol last night, you're desperate for caffeine to lighten your pounding headache. Consider walking 6 blocks to Starbucks, but change your mind to avoid running into wedding guests who haven't left for Hoboth yet. Look in the cabinet above the sink at the beach cottage and find an old Mr. Coffee and an open tin of Maxwell House. Say, desperate times call for desperate measures, and brew what you've got. Fill the I Love Dolphins mug and sip. Stale. Cry out, why me, like Nancy Kerrigan when the baseball bat struck her leg. Accuse the universe of being unfair. Reach into the pink canvas I'm the Bride tote. Pull out an almost empty bottle of Godiva chocolate vodka from last night's pity party and wish that you'd accepted your maid of honor's offer to stay at the honeymoon cottage with you. Pour half the cup of flat coffee down the drain to make room for the liquor, while telling yourself that chocolate vodka can fix anything. Carry the mug to the front porch and settle into one of the battered wicker rockers. The cushion is lumpy but soft. You think of big butts sitting on these faded blue and white stripes and start singing the lyrics of the Queen song, Fat Bottom Girls, until you realize that the old man walking as Yorkie can hear you. But start the refrain again. There's no reason to be embarrassed. Nothing can match the humiliation you felt yesterday morning when Josh didn't show up at St. Edmund's Church and the priest had to announce to the guests that there would be no wedding, but that everyone was still invited to partake of a lovely lunch at the Rehoboth Beach Country Club. You watch the old man and his Yorkie disappear down the street and wish you had a dog. Dogs are faithful and affectionate. They don't fake their feelings. Sure, a dog might accidentally pee on your oriental rug, but that's not done in full view of your entire family and all your friends on what's supposed to be the most important day of your life. Yeah, you need a dog. And you need a better chair cushion. Try all 6 rockers on the porch and acknowledge that you're a Goldilocks who never finds the right one of anything. Shelve that thought and replace it with the question of how many summer guests' behinds squish the cotton stuffing of these cushions into uneven mounds. Make up a number and say 1,749 as though it were the answer. Laugh at the silliness of it all. Relish the way the laugh feels on your mouth, across your cheeks, in your heart. You thought you'd never laugh again. You were wrong. You were wrong about a lot of things. Decide that life is too short for bad coffee, even when it's doctored by vodka. Toss the rest of the drink over the railing, aiming for the grass, but showering the edge of the garden. Watch as brown liquid drips from the white of the daisies like muddy gutter rain splashed on a bridal gown. Resolve to hate the color white. Sterile as sheets in a hospital, lifeless as an empty promise. Rush into the house and up the stairs to the second floor, discarding your t-shirt and untying the string of your gray jersey knit yoga pants. Drop these to the floor of the bedroom
and dig through the partly unpacked suitcase to find your new floral bikini with its vibrant reds and yellows. Hold it in the air to admire. You catch a glimpse of your naked body in the antique mirror. Stop everything. Study the shape of your rounded hips and perky breasts. The mirror says that Josh is missing out on something wonderful. You think this might be the best you've ever looked. Blushing at your brazen admiration of your own body, pull on the bikini and tie a sarong around your waist. You look good, fashion model good, and ready for a swim. Of course, the beach will be crowded with July beachgoers. Strategize. Weigh the advantages and disadvantages of squeezing into a spot in the center of the dense forest of beach umbrellas versus taking a chance on plopping by the water's edge. Like shopping real estate, choosing the right spot on the beach is an important decision. You become overwhelmed by the question, do I want to disappear or do I want to be noticed? You don't have an answer. Until yesterday, you were half of the Josh and Marcy invite you to a wedding couple. Now you're solo, single, available, and your brain is a wobbling plate of jello. Suddenly you feel stuck, unable to move from the room. The friendly mirror turns against you and becomes a funhouse mirror, distorting your body, revealing every part of you that you hate. Every pound you lost for the wedding seems to have returned and doubled in the flash of a moment of doubt. Decide that the bikini is too skimpy and maybe too desperate. Toss the sarong over the suitcase, pull on your yoga pants, and retrieve your t-shirt. You still look fat, undesirable, left at the altar. Pop open a bottle of champagne lifted from the reception lunch and return to the porch with the open bottle in hand like a Skid Row drunk with expensive taste. Sip champagne directly from the bottle and rock the wicker rocker back and forth, back and forth. Listen to the rhythmic complaint of the uneven boards of the porch as each forward and each backward carries the sound of wood against wood. Accept the thud-thud of the rocker against the boards as proof of the unevenness of your life. Take another sip of champagne and replay the past year. All the wedding details, contracts, sip. Designs, sip. Tastings, sip. Deposits, sip. And most frustrating of all, the endless search for the perfect gown. The one that would bring the tears that every bride is supposed to experience when finding it. Take a double sip of champagne because you never had those tears, and that should have been enough warning that something was wrong with the wedding. Yet you still handed the bridal shop your credit card for the $7,000 Vera Wang gown. Stomp up the stairs, swinging the champagne bottle. Open the closet door and toast the billowy organza skirting of the gown and the tulle-draped bodice with its sweetheart neckline. Consider the possibility of selling it on eBay, but reject the idea because you don't want anyone else to be the first person to walk down the aisle in this gown. You'd rather see it ripped to shreds and dragged from the back of your car all the way home to Washington, D.C. before you'd let some other bride walk in this Vera Wang. Twisting like a contortionist, you manage to get yourself dressed in the wedding gown without the help of bridesmaids. When you look into the mirror again, you see a bride looking back at you. Watch the tears slide down your face. Crap! Now you have the tears. You can't take the gown off, not just because it's so difficult to reach the back buttons and you already wore out your arms getting into it, but also because you were meant to wear this gown. Consider becoming the jilted Miss Havisham from the Dickens novel you read in 10th grade, sitting in your wedding gown day after day until death, becoming the neighborhood eccentric. Reject that idea for a better one. Walk barefoot in your $7,000 Vera Wang gown down Lake Avenue to the beach, ignoring the occasional pinch of a sharp stone or the snag of the skirt on a tree root. Weave through the maze of umbrellas and blankets that crowd the sand, aware of the accumulation of stairs all around you. At the edge of the water, feel the ocean breeze flutter the layers of organza like flower petals in April. Inch your toes into the chilly water, take a breath, and run into the ocean, skirt lifted to catch each wave. Ignore the lifeguard's whistle. Let the waves knock you down again. Then stand up and let them knock you down again. Repeat until the fabric of the skirt gets heavy with salt water and begins to weigh you down. Later, you'll compare yourself to Shakespeare's Ophelia
insane from being dumped by Hamlet, drowning in the river, dying from unrequited love, violins in the background. A lifeguard grabs your arm and pulls you to your feet. What are you doing? Tell him. Obviously, I'm trashing the dress. A crowd on the beach cheers as you emerge from the water. You see someone taking your photograph with a cell phone and ask her to send you a copy to memorialize this event. She asks you why you trashed your wedding gown. Say, it maxed out my visa. It had to be punished. Laughing, she pushes the send button and your image flies through space to its destination. You're grateful that the beach patrol doesn't arrest you. Luckily, the soaked wedding gown hides the wobble of too much alcohol. Walk back to the cottage in the sopping gown, a one-woman parade, smiling and waving like the celebrity you have just become. Think about starting a blog for jilted brides, preaching the therapeutic value of the popular new bridal tradition of trashing the dress, only now applied to those left at the altar. When life gives you lemons, make a Long Island iced tea, right? Outside the bedroom door, grab both sides of the bodice of the Vera Wang and tug until the back buttons pop off, then let the gown drop to the floor. Emerge like Botticelli's Venus from the clamshell. In the calm pastel blue of the bedroom, climb under the covers of the bed. Exhale, feel released from the baggage of regret, and fall asleep in mid-thought.
Nancy.
Yes.
What a wonderful reading of your story, and what a wonderful story. We're almost out of time here, but let me ask you, what is the genesis of the story, and where in the world did the idea or tradition ever come from of brides trashing their wedding dresses?
Well, I guess I should address that last part first, and I don't know where that started, but it's a recent tradition because women spend a lot of money to wear a gown one day. And so rather than just pass it on in the closet and your child is never going to wear it anyway, or sell it on eBay, a lot of them have now gotten photographs taken where they go running along the beach, or they go skydiving, or they jump off of boards into swimming pools, all kinds of things to get one last hurrah, and then it doesn't matter what happened to it. So I know a little bit about that. Only 5 years ago, I was planning my own beach wedding. And so when I heard about the story idea that these needed to be around beach houses, I was thinking to myself, well, everybody does beach houses where you rent them for a vacation, but what are the more unusual reasons to have a beach house? And I thought, beach weddings. And so I started with that idea, and having gone through all the expense and all the planning of doing my own wedding, I remember how expensive it was and how time-consuming it was, and I thought, gee, what does a girl feel like if the guy doesn't show up at the altar? And that's where the story started.
Well, it's a wonderful story, and I'll tell you, beach reads, to me anyway, are generally mostly kitsch with a minimum of literary merit. I have to say, though, that your story is devoid of kitsch and high on literary quality. And yet at the same time, it delights as a beach read. And I want to thank you very much for reading it and for reading it so well.
Oh,
it was
thank you.
Wonderful. And thank you, Susan, and thank you, Nancy, for discussing the Rehoboth Beach Read Short Story Contest with us. The deadline for the current contest is almost past July 1, so you quick writers better get to it out there and get something submitted. Certainly use Why You Trash the Vera Wang as a guide, and you can't go wrong. We're going to take a short break now, and when we return, we'll present our radio drama, Fair Warning, adapted from a short story of the same name that is found in Beach Reads. And I want to tell you, the drama is full of wind, surf, sand, and murder. You don't want to miss it.
My name is Michael Park, and every week on the International Americana Music Show, I play a selection of the best Americana music made solely by non-American artists. Whether it's alt country from Australia, newgrass from Norway, or singer-songwriters from South Africa, there's music and interviews with Americana artists from lots of countries that may surprise you. So join me for the International Americana Music Show, Friday nights at 11 on WSDL 90.7.
Have you ever heard an idea that changed the way you look at the world?
Everything we think,
we've
we
had
feel.
To believe in impossible
infinite
things.
Infinite possibility and that sense of potential. And I realize
and we've had to refuse
persist.
To fear failure.
You've got to persist through failure.
You can contemplate the meaning of infinity.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week for Ideas Worth Spreading on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on WSDL.
Welcome back to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wiltson. And now for our radio drama, Fair Warning, adapted for radio by your host from the short story of the same name by Dennis Lawson.
I was sitting at the table when she walked in. It was Mr. D's beach house, Mr. Dino to you, one of his summertime poker games. She wore a black tank top, denim shorts, and black canvas sneakers. She was tall and gorgeous. A deep tan played along the lines of the tank top. Her blonde hair was all pushed up and off her slim, kissable neck. I couldn't take my eyes off her. Except for the blonde hair. She was exactly as I remembered. She crossed the dining room to a little bar and with long, elegant fingers, took the Hendrix gin off the counter, mixed a Tom Collins, scanned the room, looked at me like I was a piece of the furniture, and disappeared into the kitchen. Dick Henderson, Mr. D's man, poured me a glass of whiskey.
You know her?
I knew Dick. He was one of the most dangerous people I knew, so I tried never to give him much. She looked familiar for a second, I said. I took a sip of my drink. Dick's light blue eyes weren't easy to meet. Maybe I was just fantasizing, I said.
I'd maybe fantasize about someone else. She's the boss's girl, while his family is away.
She's not dressed like I'd expect.
She's also a gun.
He pulled a sack of cigarettes from his coat pocket. I couldn't miss the bulge under his left arm. He jammed a cigarette in my mouth.
Now stop talking about her.
He waved a pudgy finger in my face. That evening, the card table was set up in the living room. Mr. D was there, along with four other guys, two white-haired gents around his age, another who was probably mid-30s like me, then a young 20-something who was about as young as I was when I first started in the life. I'd been out of it for a while by then. Mr. D helped me set up a legitimate business in Dover. A jewelry store and a watch shop if you want to know, but that's not important. I was still called on occasionally to do a job. Mr. D's place wasn't decorated the way you'd expect a beach house to be. You know, like fishnets and surf stuff. Instead, it was more like what I'd call Italian grandmother decor. Mediterranean landscapes, family photos from various decades, all taken at the beach or in a beach house, and enough religious knickknacks to send you to the altar rail. Dick sat on a chair in the corner, smoking and reading a paper. The bulge under his left arm always with him. The black tank top wasn't there. I'm sure she was around, though, just staying out of sight. Mr. D was sipping at Tom Collins, and I thought of black tank top and those denim shorts And it took all my willpower to keep the jealousy off my face. To lose my money with a smile. When I got up an hour or so into the game to refresh my whiskey, Mr. D followed me into the dining room.
Dick tells me you know Amanda.
I don't think so, Mr. Dina.
Phil, you've always been honest with me.
I was just checking her out. She reminded me of someone, that's all.
Who, Phil? Who'd she remind you of?
Mr. D was a big man. Big in a lot of ways, but also just big. Think Chris Christie big. His features were hard and his cigar was clamped in his teeth. Just a girl who worked at a club in Philly, I said. His face relaxed and he patted my back.
Nah, couldn't be her then. Amanda's not from around here.
Yeah, well, I knew that. Mr. D's beach house was on Virginia Avenue in Rehoboth, a short hop from the boardwalk. When I got the invitation to join him for a poker game, I decided to make a little vacation of it. I spent the afternoon swimming, getting some sun, and scheduling a surfing lesson for the next day. The poker game wrapped up around 10. One of the old guys cleaned up, and Mr. D was pretty drunk and sleepy by then. He didn't give me a hard time about Amanda when I said goodbye. He didn't even mention her. Same thing with Dick. He said there was a new girl in his life, and he might drop by the store sometime to buy her something. And Amanda? Well, I'd been hoping all night for another glimpse of her, but it never came. That is, not until I was walking down First Street in the direction of Rehoboth Avenue. From nowhere, she walked up beside me and poked a gun in my side.
I'd like to have a chat. Where are you going to be tonight?
Nice to see you too, Helen. Or should I say, Amanda?
I don't have time for this, Phil. Just tell me.
I'll be at the Frog Pond and then my motel room. No need for my gun. Besides, I was dying of curiosity. I didn't think she'd kill me. Well, I hope she wouldn't.
Which motel?
Crosswings. Crosswinds, that is. Room 223. What are your plans for the evening, Helen?
Don't mess with me, Phil.
She turned down a side street and disappeared. The Frog Pond is this great little hangout on First Street. It's the best place for karaoke among all the beach bars in southern Delaware, at least in my opinion. I was sitting at the bar, nursing a beer, thinking about Helen and watching a group of women do a more than passable job of country roads. When they finished, the DJ, a short, beautiful, bouncy brunette, said the next singer up was Amanda. And then there was Helen, taking the microphone, as the opening strings of Alanis Morissette's You Ought to Know came through. I had no idea she was there. She's always been like that. It's part of why she's so good at what she does. She killed it on the Atlantis song. The crowd loved her. When the song ended, she walked away to a ton of applause and joined me at the bar. She asked the bartender for a tumbler of wild turkey water on the side. We sat quietly for a minute. While this young guy belted out When Doves Cry, it seemed like every woman in the place except Helen got up to dance. Prince does it every time.
I'd love to catch up, but we have to talk business.
I took a sip of beer. Hey, go ahead, I said.
Dick Henderson killed my brother. It was 6 years ago.
Okay. And?
Okay. So Chuck wasn't innocent and maybe he deserved it. He was part of a gambling ring in New Jersey, but his boss messed over your man Dino. But Dick, that piece of garbage, executed 7 other guys who just happened to be in his place at the time, including Chuck.
I wasn't going to offer an opinion. I really didn't have one.
I'm not naive, Phil. Fair is fair. I just happen to think that what I'm going to give Dick is fair, too.
So you worked your way into the inside for a chance to smoke him? Why tell me all of this? She took another sip of her wild turkey, but this time half the liquid disappeared.
Dick isn't an easy guy to find, Phil. Getting involved with Mr. Dino was the only way I saw to get close to him. I don't want to talk about the things I've had to do. But tonight it should be all over. The easiest thing to do would be for me to kill Dick and then run, not look back, but then I saw you. You saw me. What if tomorrow Mr. Dino suspects you were in on it? You could be in big trouble. I couldn't take that chance.
Why? You ran out on me before. You could have done it again.
No, I couldn't. That's why I'm telling you this. Fair warning.
I reached under my shirt for my gun, then poked Helen in the side with it. I'm sorry, Helen. You can try for Dick another time. We're going to leave now, and you're going to drive out of Delaware.
Put that gun away. I'm not going anywhere. You know why I left when we were in Boston.
Doesn't really matter now, does it?
I was engaged. Look, when you and me got together, it was like nothing I'd ever felt before, but I couldn't just run out. I was in too deep. I was trying to protect you.
It was my turn to drink her wild turkey. Well, Helen, how'd it work out for you guys?
We're divorced. Finished. Dunzo.
Yeah, me too. There was a new singer up now, a woman rocking out to Separate Ways. Helen pushed my gun away.
Don't you see? We've got a second chance, Phil. I know coming after Dick, doing everything I had to do, it was right. Because it led me back to you. I can feel it. When I disappear, you can disappear with me.
I shook my head. No, I can't. I got a life here, I said. I put my gun back in its holster. Get out of here. Do what you need to do and get out. I can handle Mr. D. Just don't come near me again. Ever. She reached for my face. I pushed her hand back. Stop it, Helen. Just go. Go. She slid off her bar stool. I grabbed her wrist. Dick is dangerous, you know. He would pop you in a minute. It's a bad game. I hope you have a solid plan on how to take him down.
Don't worry. He's got a woman in his life now. Been letting his guard down, sleeping with both eyes closed, if you know what I mean. You wouldn't believe how stupid a guy can be when he's in love.
Not true. I knew all about it. I let go of her wrist. She turned around and, without looking back, melted through the crowd at the bar. I watched the door swing out, and she was gone. Back in my room, I sat at the little wooden table, drank coffee, smoked, and tried to sort out my thoughts. I was a bookmaker when I first met Mr. D. Small-time stuff, to be honest, I wasn't very good at it. When I screwed up, I would go to Mr. D's for a makeup, meaning he would cover my losses and I'd pay him back once my books were straight again. He always cut me a deal, and he never threatened me. One thing, he knew I was good for it. For another, I would do jobs as necessary to help dig him out of a hole. That was how I got into the life with him. And when things got too hot, he set me up in my shop in Dover. Sure, I still had to work for him here and there, but I owed him for everything. Yet, I betrayed him that night for Helen. And I betrayed Dick. When the sun came up that morning, he was going to be worm food. Guilt? I could live with guilt. I had plenty of things to be guilty about, believe me. This was worse, though. This was fear. Maybe Mr. D would haul me in, see through me. Maybe he'd tie me back to Helen and understand what I'd done. Maybe I would be worm food next. What got me through the night is that I kept hoping. Hoping Helen would show up and try to romance me into seeing things her way. But she knew she didn't have to. I waited up all night for her anyway. I opened my curtains, watched the sunrise. I knew that wherever Dick Henderson was, he wouldn't be opening his eyes to see this beautiful beach day. With that thought, I drifted off to sleep. My surfing lesson was at 11. The best thing I figured was to go on with my day as though I didn't know anything. Of course, I wondered about the details. Chances are that Dick was in his car trunk and Mr. D was still asleep, not yet realizing that neither of his bodyguards were going to be around today. I grabbed a towel, walked across the street to the coffee shop, and managed to choke down half a cheese Danish. Then I met the surf teacher at his van. The way it worked was he picked up the students near the boardwalk and then drove to this little inlet where the waves were friendly. Surfing was a cinch. I mean, after only a few tries, I got the hang of it. Popped up, my feet went where they were supposed to, and I was cruising toward shore. Don't look down, I said to myself. Don't look down. Skim. Skim the surface. There are no good things down here. Then I saw Helen. She was standing on a beach in a two-piece bathing suit that hid nothing and suggested everything. She was taking pictures. Her hair was brunette again, a late-night dye job. And she was wearing big black sunglasses. As soon as I saw her, I was off the board, flailing into the seat, being pulled down. Struggling up through the surf, I watched Helen come to meet me. How'd you know I'd be here? I said.
I'm good at what I do.
And, Dick?
Like I said, I'm good at what I do.
Mr. D?
Things are going crazy. I should be 3 states away by now, but I wanted to see if you changed your mind about coming with me. You've slept on it. Come with me, Phil.
I knew in that moment that I was going away with her and this was all I wanted in life. If they found us, well, she was worth dying for. We better get going, I said. You know, my wallet is in their van.
I've got cash.
I really was leaving everything behind. It hit me like one of the waves that had knocked me off the surfboard. Cigarettes, I asked. I dried off quickly and pulled my shirt on. She unlocked the door of a yellow Ford Mustang, an early 2000 model.
Nope, and I wouldn't let you smoke in here anyway.
She slid behind the wheel. The car was still cool from the air conditioning. Helen pulled my head close to hers for a kiss that wasn't nearly long enough.
I need a few hundred miles before I can really celebrate.
Then we were on our way. Route 1 unrolling behind us, Tom Petty's Last Dance with Mary Jane blaring. Last dance. I almost asked her how Dick's last dance had gone. Forget it, I told myself. Forget it. Think about this dance. The girl in the black tank top, the denim shorts, the oh-so-long blonde hair trussed up, the thin, kissable neck. This last dance. Take it, I said to myself. Take it until the music stops. Yeah, take it until they find you. I'm not going to say where we stopped or where we went. That's not worth mentioning. Except for the tumblers of wild turkey we shared and shared again. Whiskey to forget. Whiskey to wash away the past. Whiskey to numb the soul. We framed one of those surfing photos, and it's on the living room wall. It hides a compartment with a gun. At least I think the gun's still there. Another drink? Listen, buy me one more drink, will you, before we go?
A great thank you to our cast, Jim King as Phil, Cara Dahl Russell as Amanda, Matt Bogdan as Dick, and Tom Welch as Mr. Dino. Again, Dennis Lawson's short story, Fair Warning, can be found in The Beach House, published by Cat and Mouse Press. I'd also like to let you know that my guest next month will be Carol Murphy, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist for international reporting and winner of the George Polk Award for Foreign Reporting for her coverage of Iraq-occupied Kuwait and the 1990-91 Gulf War. We'll talk with Carol about journalistic writing and the current situation in Iraq. Carol escaped, for example, from Kuwait in the backseat of a Range Rover in a caravan of Kuwaitis fleeing their homeland. You won't want to miss it. And thank you again for listening to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition.
Music selections for this audio drama were taken from the following albums: John Adams' City Noir and Saxophone Concerto, performed by the St. Louis Symphony, David Robinson conducting; Kevin Gibbo's Constant Connections; and Elizabeth Heinen's Les Amis. You've been listening to a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with their host, Harold Wilson. This program is produced on the campus of Salisbury University for Delmarva Public Radio. Christopher Rank is your audio engineer. Mary Seaman is the volunteer producer. Visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, for podcasts of this program.